matter. So we are discussing about competition between the three modes. So now Krishna will talk about first verses 6, 7, 8. He has talked about general characteristics of three modes. Now he will say how we can identify which mode is predominating within us. So that first he'll talk about goodness predominating. Second verse he'll talk about passion predominating. Third he'll talk about ignorance predominating. Swaradadareshu dehesmin prakasham upajayate yanam yada tada vidyad vivruddhe sattvam ityuta.
The manifestations of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge.
Yeah. Sarva dvareshu dehe smil. A dwar of the deha. This verse is implicitly based on the Upanishadic analogy. Navadvara purede. This body is a city of nine gates. So these are the indriyas. So sarva dvareshu dehe smil. So when all the gates of the body are illuminated, like when you're going to a city, the whole city is dark. You don't know what is inside the city, which way you have to go, right, left, what you have to do. It's completely bewildering. Krishna is saying that analogy. Prakasham upajayate. When then the light is visible. You can understand, okay, this is here, this is here, this is here. So basically when there is light, then we can understand what to do and what not to do. You know, I should not take my vehicle in this direction because there is a ditch over here. I should go in this direction because there is a road over. So like that. Sarvadvareshu dehesmin prakasham upajayate. So all the gates of the body are illuminated. But what are they illuminated by? Jnanam, by knowledge. What does that mean when we say that the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge? That means that the gates of the body are illuminated with the wisdom of how they are to be used. So, one understands, this is what I should do with my senses, this is what I should not do with my senses. So at that time, when one has discrimination to understand what is beneficial and what is harmful. See, the whole purpose of Vedic wisdom is to take us to the reality beyond the pratyaksha, to the actual beyond the apparent. The whole purpose of Vedic wisdom is what? To take us to the actual beyond the apparent, to the real beyond the visible, to the essential beyond the external. So, there is this difference essentially in the material world, that the apparent is not the actual. Like a mirage. We see it, but it's not actually what. So there is the external and there is the essential. There is the real and there is the illusory. Not exactly illusory. Real and the visible. So, for example, you know, in this world, sense objects appear very attractive. And they promise a lot of pleasure. But if you try to enjoy them, there is very little pleasure. And then there is a lot of suffering after it. So the whole purpose of Vedic wisdom is to take us beyond the external to the essential. Beyond the apparent to the actual. So how is that done? That is done through Viveka Buddhi. Viveka Buddhi means discrimination. So what is Viveka Buddhi exactly? You know, it is sometimes it is translated as reasoning power. But not, it's not exactly mundane reasoning. Mundane reasoning, you have logic, you have this, that's fine. But, you know, Vidyaranya is a very great Vedic scholar. He says very important point. He says logic cannot create experience. Logic cannot substitute for experience. Logic can only examine the contents of experience. That means, no, I may logically analyze Bhagavad Gita, but I cannot experience by that logical analysis the ecstasy that I get by chanting Hare Krishna and dancing and singing. Isn't it? So logic cannot create experience. Logic cannot substitute for experience. No, I won't chant Hare Krishna, but I will study Bhagavad Gita systematically. That's fine, but the purpose of studying Bhagavad Gita is chant Hare Krishna. So logic cannot substitute for experience. What can logic do? Logic can examine the contents of experience. That means, I dance and sing, and then, if I have logical, yeah, I feel so happy. Why did I feel so happy? It is not that bhakti is anti-intellectual, but bhakti is trans-intellectual. You go beyond the intellect. How is it? Like a small child, you will be catching, throwing ball and up and down and playing with it. And if you go sometimes in a laboratory, a scientist will be doing the same thing. But he is observing, okay, if I throw up the ball with this first screen, what happens? It comes down this much. If I throw this ball down, it goes, bounces up at this speed. Then he will be understanding through that the subtle working of the law of gravity. Isn't it? Like, not necessarily subtle in the Vedic sense of subtle, but the refined understanding of the law of gravity. So, externally, the same ball is being thrown out, same ball is being... What is the scientist? Like a child is just playing with a ball. No. Because he has background scientific knowledge and he's carefully observing what is happening. So then he can learn. He can learn. So, you know, sometimes some people without knowing any philosophy, they'll just come and they'll have big mustache and beard and they'll be dancing and singing. They will also experience ecstasy. A devotee who has practiced Krishna consciousness for 10, 15 years, he will also chant and he will also experience ecstasy. He will also be playful, swinging and dancing, and he will also be sitting and chanting, doing aarti, everything. But what is the difference? The devotee is observing. Okay, I did these devotional activities. What is the effect on my consciousness? Yes, I can see agitation of the mind has gone down. Now, for materialistic people, they just practice spirituality because it feels good. It feels good, so I do it. But, you know, a devotee can observe, okay, by this particular activity, this effect is there. If you go for yatras, it's not just you want to go and enjoy. You want to see by going to yatras, what is the effect on my consciousness? So, a devotee should, just like a scientist will be observing the external objects very carefully, he wants to study. Like that, a devotee studies his own consciousness and sees what are the effects of different stimuli, especially devotional stimuli and mundane stimuli. Mundane stimuli, we don't have to go and expose ourselves to them, but they will expose themselves to us anyway. So we have to see how much they affect us. And similarly, devotional stimuli, you know, if I just go in front of the devotees and my heart is dead, I don't feel any emotion. That means my conditioning is overpowering. I have to purify myself. I have to sing some bhajans, utter some prayer, and I want to feel some emotions for the Lord. So like that, a devotee is observing his consciousness. So this Viveka Buddhi is not just mundane reasoning. The Viveka Buddhi is actually what takes us beyond the apparent to the actual. The Viveka Buddhi enables us to understand what is it that will actually make me happy and how I should engage my senses. So when I understand that, then even the goodness can become the platform for going to transcendence. So that prakash is the prakash of jnanam. Yes, Vaibhav Guru?
You said that the modes affect you, affect your thinking, willing and feeling. And you said that devotees can transcend those effects of external stimuli. So what is the exact mechanism by which this happens? How do they act on us and impel us to work in a certain way? Now, how do devotees transcend that?
Well, in the last part of the chapter, Krishna will talk about this. Arjuna will ask a specific question. So Krishna says, Vamchayo Vibhicharena Bhakti Yogana Sevati. One who is fixed in unflinching devotional service, he can transcend the modes. As in the devotee's connection with Krishna is never lost. His remembrance of Krishna, his desire to serve Krishna. And by that, he transcends the effect that mundane objects will have. So, you know, ordinary materialistic person, when he sees a woman, he will think, oh, this is an object for my enjoyment. A very advanced devotee will see this is actually not a man or a woman, this is a soul. And the soul has forgotten Krishna, and the soul should be engaged in service to Krishna. So,
basically, these are two messages that we are getting. One message is that she is an object of enjoyment. The other message is that, the message is that, you know, what are devotee will think. So, what are the sources of these messages?
Our own Krishna conscious understanding and realization. We have to imbibe wisdom from other sources, spiritual sources. And then at that time, if we are sincere, Krishna will give us that wisdom. Right? What that means is, Mattaha Smriti Jnanam Apohanam Cha. So Krishna gives jnana through Guru Sadhu Shastra. And as the Paramatma within our hearts, depending on whether we want to serve or we want to enjoy, he will give smriti or he will give apohanam. He will give remembrance or he will give forgetfulness. We may also know all this philosophy, but when the sense objects come, what happens? Sarva dharma antaritya maya vekam sharanam. We surrender to maya at that time. So why is that? Because the wisdom that we have heard are not sunk in deep enough. So, you know, we have to hear, and then after hearing, we have to pray to Krishna to get the strength to apply it. Then we will get those. So, but generally speaking, as devotees, we never try to challenge Maya. You know, I just give an extreme example. It's not that even pure devotee goes out for searching only for women to engage in service. No, he will engage everybody in service. And even a pure devotee is very cautious. So, he can engage, even those objects will engage other than sense gratification in Krishna's service. But even a pure devotee is cautious and careful. But I give an extra example to illustrate how, depending on one's consciousness, the same object can be perceived differently. But even a pure devotee, Prabhupada, in the 11th canto Uddhava Gita, where there is the song of Pururava, 11.26, there it is said that, you know, the sense objects of this world can bewilder the senses of even a self-realized person. And what to speak of an ordinary materialistic person. That's why one has to be always cautious. But the point is that, yes, by consciousness one can get the wisdom from the super soul. By that one can transcend the normal effects of the modes. And the modes and the sense objects associated with those modes have. Okay?
Yes, sense objects are dead in this matter. Mm-hmm. But the senses are under the control of superior energy soul. But still, how is it that sense objects can bewilder the senses which are under the control of the superior energy?
Sense objects are dead, that is true. At the same time, Krishna has invested different kinds of matter with different properties. And those properties stimulate certain desires within us. So, yes, now certain colors are soothing. Certain colors, if you have a nice sky blue color or gentle yellowish color, it's soothing. If you have a dark red color, that is jarring to some extent. So, now by nature's arrangement itself, certain material objects are permeated with certain quality. What is the purpose of that? That is, these objects are a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. Your Krishna, all the sense objects in the spiritual world are meant for Krishna's enjoyment. So, if you just read the descriptions of Vrindavan in Anandam and Champu, then we'll see that Vrindavan is a festival of, not for the festival of colors and fragrances and sounds and all the sense objects. No? Kakus are chirping, parrots are singing, and bees are humming. All kinds of sweet sounds are there for Krishna. All kinds of beautiful colors are there. All different flowers are different colors are there. So, like that. Originally, all the sense objects are meant for Krishna's pleasure. To give pleasure to Krishna. But when you want to enjoy here in this world, then the sense objects have certain properties. So yes, they may be dead, but they have certain properties. So that's why, because they are dead, if a corpse comes in front of them, they don't stimulate any desire. It is we only who stimulate the desire. It is our consciousness. So, our consciousness is primary. But at the same time, certain external material things affect our consciousness. That's why the whole purpose of spiritual culture is to try to put ourselves in an environment which would stimulate spiritual desires and not material desires. Clear? Yeah. So, when this wisdom is there, so it is like a covering of Maya, which covers the actual reality. So, you know, the extent of Viveka Buddhi is developed, then what happens? It's like, you know, the intelligence goes through the covering, penetrates and goes within. But the Viveka Buddhi is not developed, what happens? The intelligence goes in and everything just gets reflected back. You see that the object only as it appears. You don't see anything beyond that. So, mode of goodness can lead to that discrimination. Now, Krishna will describe in the next verse what happens when there is the mode of passion. So, we will recite the verse. You can recite after me. So, first Krishna talked about the mode of... Now, you understand the difference. Now, what is Krishna talking about? When the mode of passion predominates, then what is the characteristic? Then, what is the mode of ignorance predominates? What is the characteristics? Lobha pravrittir arambha.
Lobha pravrittir arambha.
Karmanam ashamaspruha.
Karmanam ashamaspruha.
Rajasyetani jayante.
Rajasyetani jayante.
Ruddhe kuru nandana.
Paradarshava?
Okay, next verse is kuru nandana. And they are confused between these two verses. So anyway, so Krishna is saying lobha. The first characteristic of mode of passion is lobha, greed. So the Uddhava Gita, the same theory of the Bhagavad Gita are elaborated. So there, you know, Arjuna was on the verge of a battlefield, so Krishna could not elaborate too much. With Uddhava, he had a lot of time. Aram, such as a lot, almost 20-25 chapters are there in Uddhava Gita. I mean, long chapters also. So there he describes. One of the characteristics of the mode of passion is that the senses are unable to disentangle themselves from the sense objects. The senses are just caught in the sense objects. Cannot. You know, sometimes the sense object passes by and a materialistic person goes into instant samadhi. Complete absorption. Completely forgetting everything else. How does that happen? Because lobha. Lobha means there is strong desire. I want this, I want this, I want this. And then pravruttir arambha. Arambha means what? Beginning. Pravrutti means activity. So, this keeps starting new projects. Let me try this. Why? Because every new sense object comes, it is all this. Very good. This is very good. So, people just keep chasing after new things. Karmanam ashamastruha. So, Pravrutti is the activity or the inclination to act in a particular way. And Arambha karmana. One keeps starting new activities. So he has particular inclinations, and as per the inclinations, he keeps starting new activities. And then ashama spruha. Spruha means desire. Ashama means insatiable desire. Just cannot control that desire. Desire controls him and agitates him. Rajasya etani jayante. That when their mode of passion is strong, jayante. These are born. Virudhe Bharatashava. So when this mode of passion is strong, this is what will happen to us. So, you know, if a devotee observes his own consciousness, he can see some kind. The desires are becoming very strong. Yeah, the desires are pulling me. So, if a devotee is, like Prabhupada always says, what is the difference between a Goswami and a Godas? Both of them get the desires, but a Godas says yes. The Goswami says no. And the Sadhaka says wait. So the other guy doesn't have the conviction to say no. Because he thinks yes. He feels that, you know, when the scriptures say that there is no pleasure in sense gratification, they feel easily that this is fanaticism. This is exaggeration. Yes, there is some pleasure. And I want to experience it. But the nature of Maya is, lobha is, the Krishna is saying the more characteristic of the mode of passion is lobha. So in one of these verses, Prabhupada explains in the purport that lobha is like a disease of the mind. And when there is a disease of the mind, what will happen is a person will think, now I have this particular mobile, and that person, you know, has a mobile with the camera, and that person has a mobile with the internet, that person has a mobile with this. So I want that. Somebody, I have this bike, I have a charisma, he has a splendor, somebody else has a car. So what happens? He says, I should get this. So the desires keep coming. But the problem is, that if a person is a mode of passion, he may get that particular object. But after getting that object, the cause of his dissatisfaction was not the lack of that object. The cause of his dissatisfaction was lobha. And lobha is not going to go away by that, getting that object. In fact, when lobha is satisfied, it will going to grow worse. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, if one is dissatisfied, one will not become satisfied by earning money. One will become satisfied only by elevating himself to goodness by the mode of by the practice of Krishna consciousness. Because it's a disease. It's like, you know, acquiring material objects to satisfy greed is like scratching the itch to get relief. If it gives relief, but it's temporary. Afterwards, it's going to grow again. So, lobha. And then, pravrittir arambha karmana. One keeps working very, very hard. And you see, each of the modes has its own definition of success. In the mode of goodness, the definition of success is the acquirement of wisdom. Two things. At a mundane level, there is wisdom and renunciation. So the more one becomes wise and the more one becomes renounced, The more a person in the mode of goodness thinks that he is successful. Yes, I was detached from this. You know, on Ekadashi I could fast. Success. Yes. On the other hand, a materialistic person in the mode of passion, I could eat so much. Yes, that is my success. So, the modes create our own definitions of success for us. So, as you see, as many of us devotees, you'll see that most of us want to, even those who are grihasthas, they want to earn sufficient money to have some security, and then they want to focus more on Krishna conscious activities. Have some job which is they want too much time. You can focus on Krishna conscious activities. But if you look at your materialistic friends, they will first thing they will, if you propose to think to them, they will say, you completely lack ambition. How are you so unambitious? So, actually the definition of success is completely different. For a devotee, the definition of success is as it is material realm, you cannot really get any happiness. And it's all temporary. So, put your energy in the more productive area. But on the other hand, materialistic people, their definition of success is the harder you work, the more glorious you are. Actually, workaholism is glorified in the material circle. Why? That means somebody has 365 days in a year, I didn't take a single leave. That means Maya did not leave him for a single day. But what happens is that the definition of success completely changes. And with that definition of success, if we evaluate ourselves, we'll never become serious devotees. We cannot become. That means most people in the outside world are in the mode of passion. And they have a very different definition of success. Their definition of success is in how big a house you have, how big a car you have, and how many times have you gone abroad. Actually, with respect to abroad, devotees are miserable when they have to go abroad. Because they feel there's so much maya there, there's no association there. For materialistic people, it's like a dream come true. They're so happy about it. Of course, as devotees also, internally the dream has come true, externally. Externally we feel that, okay, I'm going away from devotee association. At least I should act as if I'm sorry. But after we go there also, if we have a basic Krishna consciousness ready, we can see through the illusions. So many devotees have gone to America and they've come back and they told, actually, they see through the illusions. There's a lot of comfort there. Lot of comfort, there's no doubt about it. You know, they will not have any power cuts over there. You will not have any traffic jams. Not so many traffic jams. You will not have any, you turn on the tap, there is no water coming. That sort of things are not there. But you know, there is no personal relationships. It's all very mechanical. It's all very utilitarian. So comfort is there, but happiness is not there. And the two are very different things. So as long as one doesn't have comfort, one thinks that comfort is very important. But once one gets comfort, one understands, comfort is okay, but I need something more than that. That is not what is going to make me happy. So anyway, the point which I was making is that as devotees, the problem is that we are living in a society which has an entirely different definition from success from the devotee community's definition of success. And if we take their definition of success very seriously, then we will want to be successful in their eyes. And then we cannot be successful in Krishna's eyes. That doesn't mean that as devotees, as students, we should not try to get good marks. As employees, we should not work hard. No, we have to do that. But we don't have to adopt their culture and their definition of success. Yes, a devotee will do the work that is required. But it doesn't mean that he has to be a workaholic. On the other hand, a devotee, his definition of success is that how much I can be satisfied. You know what is he saying? Who is poor? Not one who has little, but who wants a lot. Who is poor? Not one who has little, but one who wants a lot. One may have a lot, and he still wants a lot, then he's poor. One who may have little, but he wants little, then he's not poor. So actually, poverty is certainly, you can say that this person is staying in a house, and this person is staying in a hut. That's objective. And that is, we don't deny that fact. We're not saying that as devotees, everybody should stay in huts. But the point is that somebody is sitting in a big mansion and still he's poor. Because lobha is there. He has a lot, but he wants a lot more. That's why the mode of passion is like a wild goose chase. know, in traditional circles, if you, you can hunt many animals. But if you want to hunt a wild goose, it's very difficult. It keeps running away. So to, if you want to catch some object which can never be caught, it's called a wild goose chase. It's like a wild goose chase, or it's like a chase after a mirage in our philosophy. So at a materialistic level, there is no satisfaction. Right? Lobha pravrtirarambha karmana ashamasva ashamasva uncontrollable desires. Sometimes we also get influenced by the mode of passion. So at that time, rather than trying to satisfy the desires, the devotee should try to submerge himself in Krishna consciousness. Then those desires will go away. Otherwise those desires will keep increasing. And in the next verse, Lord Krishna will tell about the mode of ignorance. What is that? Tamas. Aprakasho pravrittischa mohameva cha pandava. Aprakasho pravrittischa tamado mohaeva cha tamasyetani jayante vibhrudhe kuru nandana. So, tamasyetani jayante. Earlier was also tamasyetani jayante. So, Bhagavad Gita is a symmetrical structure. So, when there is mode of ignorance, what will happen? So, first characteristic is aprakasha and apravrittischa. Aprakasha means there is no wisdom. There is no wisdom and there is no apravrutti. Earlier it is, Krishna is contrasting. In the first verse, sarvadvareshu desin prakasham pujayati. Lobha pravruttirarambha. So, aprakasho apravruttish. So, there is no wisdom and there is no action. What is there? There is only illusion. So, mode of goodness is what? Wisdom. Mode of passion is action. And mode of ignorance is illusion. So actually, externally speaking, mode of passion and mode of goodness look the same. Because both people are inactive. But one person is inactive because he has understood that just material activity is not of much use. Another person is inactive because he is not able to do even material activity. And like sometimes nowadays, you see in the hostels, people are mad after video games. They'll sit on their bed and they'll click on their computer screen. I think they are big heroes shooting images on a TV screen, on a computer screen. So many hours people spend. So at least if you want to go and play football, play cricket, there is some physical health involved. Physical health will be improved, there is some physical activity. But people are so lazy, they don't even want to play games. So actually, in one sense, playing sports is better than watching sports. Now playing cricket, there is some exercise is there. But watching cricket, there is no exercise. There is only, you know, agitation of the mind and deterioration of the eyes. There is no benefit in any way practically. But the mode of ignorance, we cannot do wise action and we cannot do much action also. Of course, in between when a person becomes drunk, he will become hyperactive. He will go here, go there, shout, scream, beat, and then he will become inactive. So, aprakasho apravrittischa. And there is no wisdom, there is no action. Now, relatively speaking, the mode of passion is easier to dovetail in Krishna's service in the mode of ignorance. Why? If you see in the materialist society also, those people who are very hard workers and who are successful in material life, if they become devotees, they bring the culture of hard work with them. And then they will work very hard for Krishna. On the other hand, if somebody has been very lazy and good for nothing, then he comes in spiritual life, he will also stay like that only in spiritual life. So actually, unfortunately, what has happened is, as I said, with goodness and ignorance are very similar externally. So, in the 18th chapter, Krishna will talk about renunciation in the three modes. So there he says, renunciation in the mode of ignorance means, because one finds materialistic world troublesome, and materialistic work troublesome, so he gives it up. Kaya klesha bhayati chit. Kaya klesha. You know, my body will have to work so hard. I don't want to offer this one. Kaya klesha bhayati chit. Give up that work. What do you want to do? I want to become a sadhu. Give up that work. That is naiva tyaga phalam labhate. That renunciation will not lead to any spiritual advances. So actually, you know, the mode of passion can be lifted up to goodness. The mode of passion can go down to ignorance. Because one is fed up with the mode of passion. The mode of passion, sooner or later, will tire a person. And either he will glide down to ignorance. Like, you know, people will work as materialistic people in the company, they work for 5 long days, and then what will they do on the 6th and 7th days? Just glide into it, right? They just go and maybe watch 5-6 movies, or just go and glue themselves, sleep or brew or drink and smoke, and they want some relief because mode of passion drains themselves. As devotees, we may also have to work in the mode of passion, but then we will want to come to a temple, spiritualize us, come to the mode of goodness. So goodness and ignorance are entirely opposite, but they look similar. And unfortunately, what has happened in society is many people who take to renounced order, they take to it because they are in the mode of ignorance. And that's why people get the conception that anybody who takes a mode of takes to a renounced order or becomes a devotee, becomes a spiritualist, you know, he's becoming good for nothing. That's why as devotees, it's important for us to show through our life that we can be responsible citizens. Either we are as brahmacharis or grihasthas or whatever, our ashramas. You know, when we show to devotees, people, you know, we can be as responsible as them and still we can be more composed, more happy, then people will be attracted to Krishna consciousness. So the next verses Krishna will talk about, we'll discuss next time. He'll talk about death in the 3 months. What will happen? If you die in the mode of goodness, you get elevated. If you die in the mode of passion, what will happen? Die in the mode of ignorance, what will happen? So Krishna, all these modes are consequential. They're not just for analysis. Of course, all these analysis are there because they're going to have consequences. Krishna will talk about 3 levels of consequences. First, he will talk about the super long term consequences, what will happen after that. Then, second, he will talk about the long term consequences. Third, he will talk about the immediate consequences. So, that way, Krishna analyzes, and his analysis helps us to understand the need to take shelter of Krishna, need to observe ourselves in Krishna consciousness, because these modes are anyway going to act. So, we may do all this analysis now, but yes, when we go into the outside world, again, we will find out the passion acting. But, If we understand that the modes are going to act, then what will happen? We will take shelter of Krishna modes. So the whole purpose of understanding the danger of Maya is like a doctor telling the patient that your disease is very serious. The purpose of telling the patient that disease is very serious is not to frighten the patient. But the purpose of telling the patient that disease is very serious, like one devotee asked, like Chanakya Bhatti says, Swarnatyamanatitam. You can die anytime. You may die today itself. So one devotee said, if I think I'll die today, I don't feel like going to work only, I'll stay at home only. No, that is not the purpose. We have to do our duties. But when we understand the gravity of the disease, then we take the medicine more seriously. So our morning program is like the immunization program. Immunization program. So we get nice Krishna conscious vibrations through chanting of the holiness, the kirtan, the prayer. Then what happens is immunity lasts. And then we can go out and not get affected. But if we don't understand how serious the disease is, we take the immunization program also very lightly. And what happens? Then we get influenced. Therefore, our purpose in understanding the whole material world is to transcend the material world. The way to transcend the material world is not by analysis of the material world. The way to transcend the material world is by taking shelter of Krishna. But if we take shelter of Krishna, when we understand how complicated and how entangling the material world is, that's why we analyze this. So modes are extremely powerful in the conclusion of this point. In the 11th canto, Krishna uses this word by talking about the Avanti Brahmana. He says, the godlike power of the mind is unsurpassable. Very beautiful, actually. Godlike power of the mind. Actually, the mind is as powerful as God for those who don't take shelter of God. If you don't take shelter of Krishna, then the mind completely controls. And this mind makes us run here and there. So when we understand it, this mind is so powerful. If I have to save myself from it, I take shelter of Krishna. Then we can wholeheartedly take shelter. Thank you very much. The Prabhupada ki, the Bhagavad Gita ki, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki, Gaur Prema.